It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, this pandemic has created additional complications for people with existing health issues. So this hour, we want to focus in on what it's like to be treated for cancer during this COVID crisis. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Dr. Richard Deming of the medical. He's the medical director of Mercy Cancer Center in Des Moines, also founder of Above and Beyond Cancer. We want to hear from you this hour as well. Are you receiving cancer treatment? What extra challenges have you faced due to COVID-19? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Well, joining us first of all is Christy Myers. Christy is a high school English teacher at Central Academy in Des Moines. She's currently going through treatment for a recurrence of her brain cancer. Christy, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you for joining us today and for sharing your story. I'd like you to begin by describing a little bit more of your cancer background. You're, as I said, you're a teacher at Central Academy in Des Moines. You're also a wife. You have a husband, a lovely daughter, I'm sure, and I believe a dog. So tell us a little bit about your cancer background.
Oh, my goodness. It's a very long story. I'll try to keep it short.
Okay.
First time I was diagnosed with cancer, I was a high school student. I was 17 when I found out I had Hodgkin's lymphoma. So I went through treatment, was successful, and never had a recurrence of that, but was always really, you know, kept really close attention on my health. So always went in for checkups and things, and nothing major happened until I was about 30 and found out that I had a brain tumor, just sort of a random fluke sent me to the doctor. I was worried about something else, and they did a scan and found out I had this other thing. So that's when I met Dr. Deming. He was my doctor and handled my radiation treatment for that. And I had really good results with that treatment and didn't have any more problems. And then about 10 years after that, I guess, when I was 40, yes, went in for my first mammogram, found out I had a very early stage of breast cancer. So had that surgery, had that treatment, and that was, 3 years ago? And then as part of the follow-up for that, I was getting scans for, you know, just checking up on everything. And just this past December, saw that there was some unusual activity on my MRI and found out the recurrence of the brain tumor had happened. So just had surgery to remove that in January. And everything's been going really well. But I am currently undergoing chemotherapy for that, which is, I'm lucky I can have a chemo that is an oral medication rather than an IV treatment. So I just go in, check in with my doctor, and he makes sure all my blood levels are correct and everything's okay. And I just take the medicine 6 days out of every 6 weeks. So I'm about to start round 3 of 6. Tonight, actually, will be the first day. And hope that that works and clears it up. So that's what I've been through.
You sound really healthy and strong on the phone. And are you feeling all right?
I am feeling great. And I have to give credit to what I have learned from undergoing all of these different experiences, but also definitely being a part of Above and Beyond Cancer, being connected with Dr. Deming's Foundation, and with just all of the resources we have here in Des Moines. We're really lucky. We have exercise classes and nutrition programs. We have counseling. We have all kinds of really helpful, really just, I don't know what I would have done without them, but just knowing that there are people that can help us with nutrition, fitness, and, you know, controlling the things we can control. And I think that that's helped me a lot.
So glad to hear that you're feeling well taken care of. Let's talk about COVID virus, how that is, let's just say, intruded on your treatment here. I imagine it has or hasn't it? When this got serious about 6 weeks ago with COVID-19, what has changed since in terms of getting treatment or anything you've noticed there?
Everything has changed as far as just visiting the doctor. I just this week had my first virtual doctor's appointment over the phone with the video call from my doctor in Iowa City because they have limited visitors to the University of Iowa Hospitals, as I'm sure most people know. And I wasn't sure I should drive all the way to Iowa City and then, you know, have my husband come with me and then just have him wait in the car and then drive 2 hours to come home. I said, could we do this over the phone? And so we did that. And just knowing, you know, everywhere you go, you have to be really mindful and plan accordingly. I try not to make any unnecessary trips. I wear my mask when I go out, just like everybody seems to be, most people. And it's different, but I do really have a new appreciation for all the technology we have and how kind and accessible all my doctors are. They're mostly just a call or a text or an email away, and I can express any concerns I have or just get help if I need help right away. And I think that's what's really changed for me, is just using those more than I ever have before.
Is there anything you wish were different or you're having the biggest challenge with, Christy?
Oh, you know, I miss getting together with my friends and family. I think that's one of the things that keeps me going. I miss being at school every day, because when you're a teacher, you're just going all day long and the days go by so quickly. You don't really have time to sit and worry about anything. You're just moving so quickly, and everything has to happen in a certain way, so you can't let yourself kind of fall into any negative thoughts. You just go, and now I have a little more time on my hands, so I wish that I could go back to that routine that I was so used to. That really helps a lot. And just being around young people, being around students, just really is the best, and I miss them. Emails are great, but it's just not the same.
If you've just joined us, Christy Myers is with us today, high school teacher in Des Moines. She's going through some treatment now for recurrence of brain cancer, things sounding like they're going really well with that treatment. Join us with your comments. We're looking for especially listeners who are receiving cancer treatment this hour, the extra challenges you faced due to COVID-19, 1-866-780-9100, or email rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Christy, you have mentioned to Dr. Deming a number of times. Let's have him join our conversation. Dr. Deming, are you there?
Hi, Ben. Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Dr. Richard Deming is a radiation oncology specialist and medical director of Mercy Cancer Center in Des Moines, also founder of Above and Beyond Cancer. We want to mention, too, Dr. Deming is a financial supporter of Iowa Public Radio. He's also the author of Above and Beyond Cancer. And Dr. Deming, Christy there mentioned that she was in your care at one point in her history of a cancer treatment. I wonder, when you listen to her story, is it typical? Are these the kinds of things that cancer patients currently are tackling or are finding as extra challenges?
Yeah, well, first of all, Christy is not typical. She is extraordinary, and as you can tell, she is just an inspiration. She's, you know, going through her fourth cancer now, not typical. But what is typical is the uncertainty that every cancer survivor faces, and that's what makes cancer particularly anxiety-provoking, is that you never truly know if you're cured of your cancer. So there's this ongoing anxiety just in being a cancer survivor. And then on top of that, the anxiety about the virus. And individuals who are going through cancer treatment know that they're immunosuppressed, know that they're more likely to acquire the virus and might do worse. I think back the very first weekend when we had some social restrictions here in Iowa, I happened to be on call. I had about 10 times more calls that weekend, and the calls weren't really about the virus. There were calls from patients. They were clearly a manifestation of anxiety and fear of just the overall situation. So I think that's something that we're seeing with all cancer survivors. And cancer patients that are actively undergoing treatment that can suppress the immune system, understandably and intelligently represent some additional fears.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Deming, you are on the National Board of the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. You're a past chair of that board, as a matter of fact, recently. There's a recent survey of data that you were involved with that concerns our topic today. Share some of the highlights, if you would.
Yes, well, thanks for the opportunity. This is a survey that just came out. It was a survey of cancer survivors. And when I use the term cancer survivors, for those who don't know, cancer survivors from the time of diagnosis all the way through life. So cancer survivor can be someone who's just been diagnosed and hasn't started treatment. It could be somebody who is in the midst of treatment, or it could be someone who has completed treatment, or it could be someone with incurable cancer. And so the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, which is the advocacy arm of the American Cancer Society, did a survey to look at how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting individuals. So they surveyed 3,000 individuals in mid-March. There were 1,200 respondents. About half of the respondents were actually under treatment as they were responding, and another 30% were within a year of completing treatment. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that 50% of those who responded have been impacted by the COVID virus. And the most common was that they've had a delay or cancellation of appointments. And about 13% of those, they didn't know when their next appointment was going to be. They've only been notified that because of the pandemic and the restriction and having people come into the clinics, that their appointment was going to be changed, but they were left kind of hanging, not knowing when it was going to be. The other big impact was the financial impact. 38% of the respondents have been financially impacted by the COVID pandemic, and that could be either through loss of employment, through furlough, through their insurance being at jeopardy. Anyone who's going through the cancer journey understands that there are financial implications. There's the cost of cancer care, but most individuals have a great financial burden that's unrelated to the actual treatment, that's related to travel and child care and mm-hmm. loss of income. So both the uncertainty of the treatment and the financial impact have caused increasing anxiety for cancer patients.
I wonder, Dr. Deming, when we talk about those elective surgeries, the degree to which that affects active treatment for cancer patients, is there a dividing line there? Are there some procedures that are involved in cancer treatment that are not going ahead now because of COVID-19?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ben, that's a great question. So first of all, American Cancer Society believes that cancer doesn't stop and neither can we, and that important, necessary cancer treatment needs to continue. But what is an elective procedure and what's a necessary procedure? So let me kind of put that in perspective. First of all, there's screening for cancer. So a screening for cancer is someone who does not have cancer but is undergoing, for example, mammography, which might detect early cancer, or pap smear for breast cancer, or colonoscopy for colon cancer. So screenings are done to try to find an early cancer. Everyone agrees that there's no harm in delaying that right mm-hmm. now while we're going through this pandemic. But when you come down to procedures once you've been diagnosed with cancer, that gets a little bit more difficult as to what is elective and what is necessary. Obviously, if someone is having severe symptoms due to bleeding or obstruction of the lung or obstruction of the bowel, then that treatment is absolutely necessary and would not be delayed. But what about someone who has an early stage breast cancer that's already been diagnosed and the treatment is a lumpectomy? Is that an elective procedure or is that a necessary procedure? In all honesty, many women with very early stage breast cancer delay of a few months would not have a significant impact, but it's really important to communicate very openly and honestly with patients, because many patients who do have early stage cancer, when they're told they have cancer, what you hear when a doctor says you have cancer, what they hear is you're going to die. That's the emotional response. So to tell someone they have cancer, but then to tell them, but we're going to delay your treatment by 3 months, that is a very anxiety-provoking, and it really requires that those of us providing the news have to really put things in perspective and explain how aggressive a cancer may be or may not be and what the alternatives are, and also make sure that we're attending not just to their physical needs, but to their emotional and psychological and really philosophical needs.
If you just joined us, Dr. Richard Deming with us the entire hour. He's medical director of the Mercy Cancer Center in Des Moines. Also with us, Christy Myers. She's being treated for recurring brain cancer. And we've got a little bit left in this segment here. I want to get some input from our listeners here. Here's an email to share with both of you from Jody in Boone. She writes, I haven't seen a lot of changes, to be honest. I had a colon resection, if I got that correctly, on October 2nd, 2019, and literally haven't touched a doorknob with my bare hand since. I recovered in a room in my house with limited interactions from anyone. I'm in active chemo now, and things are pretty much the same, except for working from home. But visiting Bliss Cancer Center in Ames is different. The waiting room used to be standing room only, but starting about a month ago, it has only had about 2 to 5 people at a time. And those of us who are compromised wait in a different room. Everyone has masks on, pretty much. The level of care is the same, but I can't bring my own blankie anymore. And she's got a smiley emoji there. So talk about that aspect of it. We have to respect social distancing, and the accommodations need to be made, doctor.
Oh, yes, yes. We're all wearing masks. We're all wearing our protective gear. I mean, it's very important. The COVID pandemic is serious, so we need to do our physical distancing. We need to wash our hands. We need to wear our protective gear. But it does change the way in which the interactions happen. I happen to be a hugger, and I remember saying many, many times of my 30-year career, when they make it illegal for a doctor and patient to hug, I'm probably going to get out of medicine. And now all of a sudden, we are not allowed to hug. We're not allowed to shake hands. And I still find it necessary when I go into the room and meet a patient, especially for the first time, to, you know, stand 10 feet back and take my mask off and show my face and smile and we sort of do the same from an appropriate distance to sort of make that connection. So much of cancer care is a human being treating a human being. Right. And the humanity of the relationship is therapeutic. And as a person with a mask on, seeing another person with a mask on, there's some loss of connectivity. So at appropriate distance, we show each other our faces a bit as we sit down and begin to communicate. Another aspect is, as Christy mentioned, is these virtual video audio visits. So, for the last 10 years in medicine, we've tried to figure out how to do telemedicine, how to bill for it, how to do all of the compliance, all the HIPAA, and overnight we have resolved those problems, and we're now doing Zoom meetings, which are effective, but they're still not the same as being in the room with the patient. And some of what I think of is, you know, often we will be with the patient and their significant other or family members, and sometimes you'll be talking with the patient, but you'll be looking at the facial expressions of the spouse who, you know, is giving all sorts of nonverbal clues that perhaps what the patient is telling you isn't the whole story.
Right.
And we lose some of that with the video and telephone visits.
I want to go back to Christy before our half ends, and we say goodbye to Christy here. Christy, I want to ask you about your, well, you have a long history of battling cancer successfully, going way back to your teens. I wonder if, you know, in dealing with sort of life and death matters here, you're perhaps better equipped than many of us who are thrown into this pandemic situation. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot, and I've been trying to, you know, stay positive, and I have my moments, but
right.
I do think it has prepared me for the unexpected, because you have to come to terms with nothing is guaranteed. None of us know for sure that we have any certain amount of time, and we have to make the most of that. And what's harder, I think, right now is that instead of just worrying about myself, I'm worried about everyone I love, and that's a lot of people.
Yes,
I feel like that's a little bit more of a burden. But I often think back to a poem that Dr. Deming shared with me at an appointment. It seemed to coincide with the beginning of summer, so it was the end of the school year. And you would think I would have known this poem because I'm the English teacher, but no, he's always sharing things with me that I have good recommendations for books and things. But it was The Summer Day by Mary Oliver, and there's a line in that poem that says, "Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" And I think about that all the time. I think about how none of us knows what's ahead of us and how we just have to make the most of right now. And right. Be present and be mindful and never let an opportunity pass by to tell someone that you love them, and just do the best you can to be there for those people and be the best you can be. And I think that has guided me through a lot of hard times.
Well, Christy Myers, I can tell that you've been an inspiration to others as you've been inspired by Dr. Deming. But in this conversation, you've inspired others who are listening, undoubtedly many, with your approach to your own lengthy battle with cancer and now with this extra anxiety of the COVID-19 crisis. Christy Myers, a high school teacher in Des Moines, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing. We wish you the very best, Christy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben.
Dr. Deming will stay with us. He is a medical director of the Mercy Cancer Center in Des Moines. And when we come back, we'll be joined by another patient who's had a long battle with cancer and talk further with Dr. Deming when we return. Talking about cancer, having cancer, treating cancer, being a cancer survivor in the time of COVID-19. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, this hour we're exploring what it's like to be treated for cancer during this national health crisis. Dr. Richard Deming is with us the entire hour. He's a radiation oncology specialist, also medical director of the Mercy Cancer Center in Des Moines, author of Above and Beyond Cancer. Also, we're hearing from Iowans currently going through cancer treatment. Are you currently being treated for cancer? What has it been like during this national health crisis? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Earlier today, I spoke with Nancy Hagen and her husband, Jonathan Toole. Nancy is, of course, a longtime colleague of mine here at Iowa Public Radio. She works in our development department. Her husband, Jonathan, has been undergoing treatment for cancer for several years. And I spoke with both of them this morning and started off by having Jonathan describe the type of cancer he has and the treatment he's been receiving.
For me, multiple myeloma is a blood cancer that, among other things, compromises an individual's immune system, rendering them more susceptible to infection. So treatment over the nearly past 6 years has included nearly weekly trips to the University of Iowa for various injections and infusions to help deal with this. That includes four stem cell transplants. Most recently, last April, a year ago, I received my brother's stem cell transplants because my system was no longer able to be effectively treated by most drugs. And we were trying to get into clinical trials, and I just was not able to qualify because of my system. So anyway, so we had that stem cell transplant, and since then I've been doing pretty well. Right now I'm currently on a clinical study, and it's working effectively so far. So that started in January of this year.
Well, very good. You sound good. We of course wish you well going forward. Let me ask both you and Nancy. You first, Jonathan. How has this COVID crisis changed the treatment, the regular treatment that you've been getting in this most recent round?
Well, kind of in an odd way, I've been sort of practicing the pandemic protocols for the last number of years with the wearing of gloves and a mask out in public, self-quarantining and washing hands, etc. And so I've kind of been doing that sort of thing on my own, which sort of makes this transition somewhat easier, for me at least. One issue that came up was several weeks ago, I broke a tooth and contacted the dentistry office, and they said, in a nutshell, because I wasn't having any pain, I didn't qualify for non-essential surgery. Mm. So I had radiation on my lower jaw last summer, and as a result, I'm concerned with oral issues. And so having a broken tooth and wondering, geez, am I going to get an infection developing because of this is a concern. So for me, the actual treatment itself hasn't been an issue. It's just some of the tangents related to this cancer that has proven problematic potentially.
Mm-hmm. Nancy, what has this been like for you as a caregiver and Jonathan's husband since the start of the COVID crisis?
Well, first of all, we're coming up on a 6-year anniversary of his diagnosis. So we've been doing this for a long time, and the immune system has always been of concern. And so I've always had to be careful. We've practiced social distancing this entire time. I mean, we limit our activities during flu season. We don't go to restaurants. We don't go to the theater. I mean, we've been homebodies to a great extent. So this, I think, for most people would be a huge transition. As Jonathan mentioned, it's been pretty easy for us to acclimate to a degree. However, as caregiver, now with how this virus works and how contagious it is, even I am not going anywhere. I go do new Pioneer Co-op curbside pickup. I order everything online. If we need something that I can't get, friends drop it on the front porch. It really has curbed my ability to just run out spontaneously for errands. And, so from that perspective, it's all the pre-planning, the trying to make mm-hmm. sure that I've gotten everything ordered ahead of time, because there are a lot of things that Jonathan needs that are special things that you can't normally find in stores on the shelves. And so there's just a lot of pre-planning that has added a little bit of stress, and just because there have been shortages on some things. And
right. Nancy, do you feel that the quality of care has been different? Or, I mean, we heard the tooth story, right? Not necessarily connected with cancer, but I guess everything can be potentially connected with cancer when you have the type of cancer that Jonathan has. Less care, the quality of care different, delay of treatment? Do you feel that the cancer treatment is going on as you hope, since it is showing to be so far promising?
We feel good about it. We feel like the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and that's where we're at right now for this stage of the treatment, And it is a clinical trial. We feel like things are moving forward as they normally would. The exception, and in this case, it's a good exception, is that they have really changed the scheduling of other patients where non-essential treatments have been put on hold. So when Jonathan goes to the waiting room, it's sparsely populated. On a normal Monday, that place would be packed. Mm. And the infusion suite, the same thing. I mean, there's lots of space. I mean, there are people up there, but it's very spread out. On a normal Monday, that place would be packed. So we feel like they've taken good precautionary measures to ensure that people who actually have to be there, and those are people like Jonathan, and just about anybody going through some sort of cancer treatment is going to have a knock against their immune system. So it is of concern. And so I feel like they've been very safe. We feel safe. I'm no longer able to go with him. They are not allowing any visitors at all to accompany patients. So I can either drop him off, or if he feels well enough, he can drive himself and park and walk in. And in terms of the treatment, we feel like that has not been impacted at this point.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You are no strangers to stress, extreme stress. With Jonathan's cancer diagnosis, some 6 years ago, you said, how has this crisis, this national health crisis on top of it, affected your mental states, the kind of stress that's been added to the enormous, what I have to think is for anybody, enormous stress already. How have you been dealing with it?
Yoga.
Yoga? Yeah. There you go.
Well, you know, Heartland Yoga is doing virtual classes, and so I'm able to continue doing that. But I will not lie, I am tired. My heart aches for the world, you know. So there's just that empathetic part of it that's really just part of who we are, and we can't, you know, we can't get rid of, you know, that overwhelming feeling from time to time. But luckily, we really enjoy being held hostage together in our home.
We enjoy puzzling, so that's been a...
You know, since you are quarantine veterans, share with our audience, what are some of your favorite activities when you're quarantined together there as a twosome?
Puzzling reigns supreme. We actually both enjoy gardening and working outside. So with spring rolling around, we're fortunate to be able to get outside, which is great. Hopefully there won't be much of a second wave to roll through during the winter months next year, which could certainly prove more problematic. And you're forced to be inside 24/7 just about.
Well, Nancy, my friends Nancy and Jonathan, thank you for sharing what life has been like for you, Jonathan, as a longtime cancer patient. And we know this has been a long road since that first diagnosis 6 years ago. Thank you for walking us through it and telling us about your experience. And of course, Nancy Hagen, Jonathan Toole, we wish you all the very best. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Such a delight to talk with those two, Jonathan and Nancy, earlier this morning. We have a few minutes left in the hour. If you're receiving cancer treatment, we're interested in finding out from you what extra challenges, things have you faced due to COVID-19? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Dr. Richard Deming has been with us live. He is the radiation oncology specialist and medical director of the Mercy Cancer Center in Des Moines, founder of Above and Beyond, author of a book called Above and Beyond Cancer, also a financial supporter of IPR. We want to disclose that. Dr. Deming, there you go, the twosome there, Nancy and Jonathan, just react to that. So important to have people with you if you can. That you know, conquering cancer is not just chemistry, is it?
Great point. And Jonathan and Nancy just are obviously inspirational, and along with Christy, you know, what they're doing is not only going through the journey, but then they are using their wisdom to help illuminate the pathway for others and helping others by paying it forward. One of the things that Nancy commented on that I wanted to elaborate, and that's the fact that Nancy can no longer go with Jonathan, mm-hmm. Jonathan to the infusion center. So there are individuals now who are going in for chemotherapy for the first time all alone. Not knowing what it's going to be, what the side effects are going to be. It's scary enough, but typically someone would go in with a loved one, a supporter, a friend, who not only would be there just to support them and relieve the fears, but also to be with them during the, you know, 2 to 6 hour infusion to chat with. So that has created more stress and more anxiety. In the medical profession, we have these rules to reduce the spread of viruses, but we also have the ability to compassionately make some exceptions to rules. I can think of a couple of patients that just were not going to be able to get through the treatment without their supporter there by their side, and we have made exceptions when necessary. Also, sometimes an individual may be coming for treatment who has communication issues, may have some hearing deficits, maybe some cognitive deficits in their grown children might be very important. And absolutely, I will go out to the hallway and say, you know, we need to have you come back to be part of this conversation.
Yep.
And I'm just happy to say that we find compassionate exceptions to some of the rules. Still able to provide the safety that is necessary, but also be able to provide the compassionate care that is absolutely essential in taking care of cancer patients.
Coming to the end of this hour with Dr. Richard Deming as we discuss cancer during the time of this COVID crisis, we want to also talk with Krista Walsh before the hour ends, Director of Community Development in Iowa with the American Cancer Society. Krista, are you there?
I am here. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you for being with us. We want to have you talk about some of the programs and services for families and patients that are available to help provide support and service for those with cancer during this time.
Yeah, well, as Dr. Deming mentioned earlier, cancer hasn't stopped due to the pandemic. It's not going to stop. So as the American Cancer Society, we know it's more important now than ever that we are there for our cancer patients, the survivors, and the caregivers who are helping them through this time. So we definitely want to let everybody know that we have an 800 number that we encourage anyone who's dealing with a diagnosis or supporting someone going through a diagnosis, please reach out to us. We have several programs and services that we can look to assist you through your journey. Our 800 number is 800-227-2345. And we can also access us through the internet by going to cancer.org. A couple of the programs that really come to mind is we're here to help through emotional support. So they referenced the anxiety and the fear earlier, and we have someone answering our phones 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So no matter what time of day, if you need to talk to somebody, whether you just need someone to listen or you need answers to questions or maybe some direction on where to go next with your treatment, please reach out to us.
And Krista, I want to mention, we'll post this number on our web post for this program. Just to repeat it, 800-227-2345, a hotline from the American Cancer Society for all your concerns, treating cancer, dealing with cancer. Krista, I wonder if you can share with us, what are some of the most common questions and concerns you are hearing about from cancer patients?
Well, I think just getting access to care is a huge, huge question that's coming up. We have, unfortunately, due to the current situation that everybody is in, we have had to suspend a couple of our programs, but we hope that through time they will open back up. We have our Road to Recovery program, which allows volunteer drivers to take patients to and from treatment. And then our Hope Lodge, which is a home away from home for cancer patients throughout. We have 34 of them throughout the country. The one in Iowa that we have is in Iowa City. So those two things, unfortunately, are suspended at this time. But like I said, hopefully things will clear up and, you know, the concern for the safety of those patients, the volunteers and the staff will be lifted so we can get back up and operating with those. In the meantime, we do partner with a lot of hotels. We're working with them to help us find lodging for patients who may need it when they have to travel far away from home. We're looking at potentially giving them lower flat rates or reduced rates to help ease that financial burden, and really just give them an option of not necessarily having to travel long distances for treatment on a daily basis.
Right. And we know, we hear, and we pray that there is a quick vaccination for the COVID-19 virus, that gets figured out. We understand the virus better, but research in areas of cancer is still active as well, isn't it?
It is, yes. So we're very excited. In the state of Iowa, we are currently funding 6 different researchers for over $2 million. And that's just here in the state of Iowa. So it's very exciting to see that we, as an organization, are funding so much research. We are the largest private, not-for-profit source of cancer research in the U.S. And, you know, that's how we're able to, we've been able to fund 49 researchers who have gone on to win Nobel Prizes. And really, they're the ones who are accelerating what our society looks like as far as cancer treatments, finding the clinical trials, and really helping to pave the way of what cancer is going to look like in the future.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Krista Walsh of the American Cancer Society. We have a couple minutes left. I want to turn back to the guest we've had on this entire hour, Dr. Richard Deming. Dr. Deming, we have a couple minutes left. We've heard such inspirational voices this hour. Christy at the beginning, Jonathan and Nancy there just a few moments ago. And I know people turn to you for inspiration in trying times when it concerns cancer. And now we've got this other layer of the COVID-19 crisis here. Leave us with some thoughts of yours to perhaps get us through the afternoon, the days to come, the weeks to come. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I would say that all of these difficulties that we face create a lot of fear, and the fear is primarily thinking about what if and bad things that can happen in the future. But in reality, we have today, and we have the present, and we have each other. And that is a lot. And when you value each and every moment, and you take the time that we have now to get back to spending time with people you love, with people you care about, taking time to reach out to those people that you haven't connected with. I mean, I think of my life where 4 or 5 nights a week I have meetings. I don't have those anymore. Mm-hmm. I have the opportunity to enjoy the moment and to really reach out and connect significantly with people that you care about. So I would,
and people who are perhaps, you know, are suffering from the isolation, right?
Yes, exactly. Also, as you seek each day to find joy in your life and to spread joy, I have found that the shortest path to joy is to do something to help someone else. So if you're sitting there and you're feeling bored, the fastest way to bring joy into your life is to think, what can I do for someone else? Is it a phone call? Is it going to pick up groceries for a neighbor that you haven't even talked to, but you know is has transportation issues and is at risk? How can you help someone else? So as we hunker down, as we all face mortality, we can find joy in the moment and in the relationships that are important, and in finding a way to make someone else's life a little easier.
Wow. We'll end it there. Some wonderful thoughts from Dr. Richard Deming of the Mercy Cancer Center in Des Moines. Thank you so much, Dr. Deming, for joining us. Also, Krista Walsh of the American Cancer Society, thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yes, thank you very much.
Tomorrow on the program, it's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River. We'll discuss the rash of coronavirus outbreaks at meatpacking plants across the country. We'll talk with Amy Mayer about that. Also, I'll talk with the director of RAGBRAI on that decision to call off this year's ride across the state for the first time in the nearly 50-year history. River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Matt Alvarez, and Rick Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.